Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We begin by acknowledging the Gabigabi people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast episode is being recorded today, and pay respects to their elders, past and present, and to their parents with children with disabilities.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F-word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Well, you probably won't hear quite so much swearing among the beans, you know. Well, yeah. Not suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, peas and beans. It's Gary Bean here. So pleased to be with you. This opportunity is something that I've been trying to describe to somebody the other day. The opportunity I have to speak with these dads, these bean dads, and to hear their stories and to hear them describe their bean sprouts, their little pea shoots, their beloved children, just to hear the love in their voices and to appreciate their honesty and openness when we talk. And the closest I can come to it is that it feels like being on sacred ground. That's not an original term, but it's the closest that I can come to what it feels like. You know, am I getting too philosophical? I do that. I'm sorry if I am. I'm just trying to say what a rich and glorious experience it is to be able to just sit and talk and share these stories. Today, you'll hear a conversation I had with Dino Trenton. Dino is a dad to his pea shoot Lexi, who's 9 years old. And you'll hear the love in his voice for his family, and you'll hear something of his heart as he talks. Dino has worked for about 15 years in the AV industry, the audiovisual industry, in Melbourne. His AV hire company provides staff and equipment for staging and audio and lighting, etc., for conferences and events all around Melbourne. Whenever you go to a conference, it's a company like Dino's that has been working away, setting up all of the sound gear, all of the lighting. Now, Dino describes himself as not primarily a tech person. He's not the sound engineer. He's not primarily doing the tech, even though he can do that. His primary role is to be customer liaison and a team builder. And I think you will get why he is so good at that, with those skills in dealing with people, relating to people, encouraging and inspiring people. Very recently, his company have been live streaming funerals and memorial services. They do 6 or 8 of these a week in Melbourne at present. What an incredible service to be providing to people at a time of great need. to be able to make it possible for them to take part in a ceremony, a funeral service, when they can't physically travel to that location and be there in person. And it seems to me, just from what little I know of Dino, to be just a perfect fit. He's able to offer this service with all the technicalities involved, but with that personal touch where he's giving something of great value to the people who are taking part. During this conversation, there's a couple of things I wanted to mention. You'll hear Dino mention his partner, his wife Claire, quite a few times. You'll hear the love in his voice when he talks about Claire. It's interesting to me that he told me after we finished recording that he had a note in front of him. The only note that he took into his studio for this recording, didn't prepare himself with any other notes except this one note, which said, "Don't forget to mention Claire," which is just so gorgeous, because it wasn't hard for him to remember to mention Claire, let me tell you, and you'll hear that. I just think that's a lovely, lovely little example of the way Dino thinks and the way he feels about Claire. He also, and this was the thing that will stay with me the most from this conversation, he also talks about his role as a dad when he's at an event with Lexi, when he's at a party or on the sporting field or somewhere where there are other kids and other families. And he describes it this way. He says that he becomes Lexi. He makes sure that she participates through him. And I will let him describe that to you, but that really stuck with me, and I'm just so glad that we had this conversation. So here he is, Bean Dad, Dino Trenton. Hello, Dino.
Good morning. How are you going?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. So good of you to join me, and there are so many people listening right now, on their behalf, I thank you too.
You're welcome. I was pleasantly surprised on just how popular this podcast is, and I think by its success has now made me more nervous than what I was intending to be. So I was
look, you're among friends. I can assure you.
Look, and I think that's the part that kind of has made me very humbled. The fact that you've asked me to join you today. I was even chatting to, I was mentioning it even to my carers, you know, that I was doing this podcast, and I just mentioned it sort of just on the side, and you should have seen it. It was like I was just about to perform on stage at a big concert, and they're like, "What, you're going on that show?" And it's like, "Yes." I go,
"Is that right? Isn't that lovely?"
Yeah, no. So that was.
So then now they can say that they knew Dino before he was famous.
Oh, absolutely, and, absolutely.
Give him your autograph, mate.
No, that's right. So,
but you're right. I mean, this is a bunch of, look, let's face it, we're all ordinary people. None of us are superstars. We are being required to do some extraordinary things, but we're all ordinary people.
Absolutely.
And we're delighted to have you, because your story is going to add to the tapestry. And from what little I've heard in talking with you already, I know that the peas and the beans, the green vegetables who are listening, will appreciate it so much. So,
yeah.
So having said all of that, let's do the little three-step intro that everyone's used to. It sort of warms us up a little bit. And I'm going to ask you if you have a favorite piece of music that either picks you up or calms you down.
Well, I do love Bill Withers' Lovely Day. Which is always my go-to song, and when I'm feeling a little bit down, or, you know, when I'm having a hard time, you know, and that always seems to pick me up, and I just love that song. And I actually had a little listen to it 5 minutes before we connected as well, just to put me back in the mood. And it's just a great song, and it just really resonates with me, you know, with my daughter, and, you know, the life that we've now been given, and, you know, and it really, really makes me appreciate that I, you know, live day to day, and, you know, and then you look at the things that really mean the most to you, and, you know, and that's the things that really matter. So,
yeah. And a piece of music is sometimes just magic, isn't it? It's just the way that we'll unlock something or stimulate a thought. So thank you. That'll go in the Spotify list for everyone else. If they haven't tried that one, they can as well. Thanks for that. So the second question then is, did you win any awards at school?
Not really. I'm trying to think. My school life was pretty lackluster, I suppose. There's nothing there's nothing that really stands out in my school. It was just a normal sort of upbringing, and I think my only accolade for my schooling was, you know, being class captain in year 11, which was which was pretty much the only thing that I can kind of think of that.
All that responsibility,
all that responsibility. But back then, it really was just to be class captain because I wanted to attend the meetings because they had biscuits in the meetings, and that was my main. That was my main sort of drive to to get.
Well, why else
meetings.
Would you be captain?
That's right.
I hope they were good biscuits. Biscuits.
They were, but it taught me. I think there was a whole campaign about class captain, and I started a voting campaign and then end up doing some posters and got right into it. So I probably should have been destined for a political career after the involvement I had with that, which
enjoyed. You're too nice a guy. Yeah,
exactly.
Don't even think it. But it does go to something that I'm picking up about you, Dino, and that is that you are very good with people. People like you and trust you, and I'm not surprised at all that if you started a voting campaign that they would go to you for captain.
Okay.
And the third question, of course, is why are you what is now called a bean?
Well, I'm a bean thanks to my beautiful daughter, Lexi, who is now 9 years old, and she has quadriplegic cerebral palsy, which was all from birth. So Lexi was diagnosed with having a stroke in utero at 37 weeks from what we was at that stage a perfectly normal pregnancy for my wonderful partner, Claire. And then our lives got turned upside down, you know, in the blink of an eye.
I
always remember that day, never forget.
Well, we want to hear about all of that. Before I take you back to how Lexi came into the world, can you just introduce us to her just right now? She's 9 years old. Tell us who Lexi is, this lovely little girl. What's she like?
She is an amazing young lady. She has just so much charisma, so much spark, and she's just a little rock star. And you know, we walk down the streets and nobody even looks at me anymore. You know, they just see they just see Lexi. And, you know, it happened again on Friday when I was helping a friend down to one of the local cafes and they were introducing me. But, you know, they always introduce me as Lexi's dad, you know.
Yes,
no one knows who I am. You know,
I know that well, yes.
Yeah, so...
That's a badge of honour, mate.
That it is. So, you know, she's an amazing girl who has... You know, that every day, you know, every day is a challenge in everything that she does, you know, because of her high tone and high spasticity and, you know, and needs help in every way. But she's so determined and she's just so bright that, you know, I know that she wants to live life to the fullest. And, you know, my job is to just help her try to achieve everything that she wants to achieve.
Oh, mate, I'm smiling here just picturing her. Thank you for that. That's the right way to start, I think, is to sort of be able to picture her a little bit, to have a sense of meeting her and the wonderful person that she is before we start talking about all the medical stuff, you know, and all the journey and so on. So that's wonderful. Thank you. Well, we are grateful to have met Lexi in that lovely and loving little introduction as her dad. Thanks, mate.
No problems.
All right, so let's now, you've mentioned your partner, Claire. Who else is at home with you? Who's at your place?
So Claire and we have another beautiful daughter, Summer, who is 6 years old. So it's Lexi's youngest sibling.
Yep.
And who is Reign of Terror, and we love her to death, and she is just an amazing little sister to Lexi, and we just couldn't contemplate life without her as well. So
absolutely,
it is a great, it's just a really good combination now that we have at home. So it's the four of us at home.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the dynamic between Summer and Lexi, they're good. They get on.
They get along most of the time, you know, but, you know, there is
they don't
always,
have to get along all the time.
They don't
time,
always do they? Have to get along. No, no, no. But it's, you know, Summer's now at that age where she's sort of old enough to now sort of start understanding a little bit more about Lexi's, you know, complex needs. And, you know, it's always been that challenge with the younger sibling about why all of the attention goes to Lexi most of the time. And, you know, so she's at that age now where, you know, she's, you know, tries to include, you know, she's tried to be as inclusive as possible with everything. But, you know, at the end of the day as well, you can't stop her from being a six-year-old as well. And she needs to have all the experiences that she needs as a six-year-old as well. So, yeah, so it's an interesting dynamic now. You know, it's that part of our life that, you know, can be quite challenging at times as well. And, you know, and sometimes there's those moments that you sort of stop and, you know, you're like, why are you doing, why are you, you know, not letting her do what she wants to do, and why are you complaining? And sometimes you just want to go, what happens if you should be thankful that you can run around and do the things that you want to do, and, you know, and what happens if it was the other way around? But they're still far too young to sort of, you know, understand that sort of concept.
Yeah, they're 9 and 6.
Yeah.
And this is going to be their story for their lifetime too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We always had the motto in our family that nothing is ever simple. And that's okay to grow up that way and realize that, you know, hey, nothing is ever simple, and we'll live with that.
No,
you know,
that's
we'll
right.
do what we can.
Mm, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for introducing us to your lovely family. Let's go back to the time that Lexi came to us. You mentioned a stroke in utero.
Yeah, so well, it all started. I was working. I remember it was an afternoon, 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was, you know, so we were 37 weeks into the pregnancy, so we were at the stage where we were starting to plan everything, and, you know, what we thought was just going to be a normal birth. My partner Claire just went in for her regular appointments down at the hospital, and, you know, she just made mention that she thought that Lexi was, you know, sort of not as active as what she normally was, and was a little bit concerned. So they just put Claire on the normal monitors, and, you know, sort of then they realized that the heart rate was, you know, was a little bit abnormal at that stage, and they thought that there was a few concerns. And that's when I got the phone call when I was at work from one of the nurses saying, I remember it well because pretty much the first words to come out of the nurse's mouth was, "You're going to have a baby today." And it was just
wow.
Took me by surprise. It's like, are you serious? Is this, is this really happening? And it's like really trying to find out why. And, you know, she was pretty calm on the phone and just said, look, you really need to come in here now. So I essentially, you know, was able to just drop everything and just jump straight in the car. And thankfully, my office is not far from the hospital, so I was able to get to the hospital pretty quickly. And that's when, you know, I met up with Claire and, you know, she was there and on all the monitors. And then I realized that, you know, things weren't sort of going to plan. And this is when everything was happening so quickly. And then it was pretty much, you know, they were getting her ready to go and have an emergency cesarean. So we were pretty much, it was all happening so quickly that you didn't even really have time to sort of think. You're just going with the flow. And there's that fear going through, but there's that excitement of, you know, there's a baby coming and it's happening right now. And so we were pretty much rushed straight into, emergency cesarean at that point. And
were you able to be there as well for the season?
Yeah, Yep, I was there, and you know, so I got scrubbed up, and you know, got my gown put on and everything put on. So we just went straight in, and it was just all so surreal on how quickly it was all happening. So yeah, so we went in, and you know, so you know, cesareans is it's a crazy, you know, not being ready for it. It was just a such a surreal experience, the whole thing. And I still remember, you know, just how calmly all the doctors are, and you know, there's the two of us just, you know, quietly freaking out, you know, behind this curtain, while the you know, the doctors and all that are just talking normally about their day. And then one thing I'll always remember is the smell of, you know, of the procedure and of skin getting burnt, and you know, that's one thing I can't sort of ever forget, you know. And then, you know, it's all happening very quickly, and you know, Claire and, you know, I'm just there trying to, you know, try to be as calm as I possibly can for Claire, and you know, while quietly, you know, quietly in my mind going, what is happening right now? So yeah, so
that and was... moments like that, you know, you do your best to be calm, and I'm sure you were outwardly, and you got through it. But you're on high alert, aren't you? Your whole body is on alert, so no wonder something that you smell or see or hear in that moment is going to stay with you.
Oh, absolutely, and that because we had no idea what was happening either, you know, or what the situation was, or how bad our baby, you know, is, or how healthy or unhealthy she was at that particular point. You know, we had no idea. So it was that waiting game now, and it's like, oh, is this gonna, what's gonna happen, what's happening, you know? So
what did happen when Lexi came out?
So she came out, and I'll always remember when she came out, there was that cry. So she did cry when she came out, and very, very briefly. It was like literally just a quick whisper of a cry, and then you know, that moment it was like, oh, this is going to be okay. But then that was it. There was no more. She went quiet, and it was that moment. It was like, well, why has she stopped crying? You know, shouldn't she be crying more? And it's like, what I think is supposed to happen is now not happening, you know. And, you know, so she, you know, I she got delivered, and, you know, so we knew straight away, they said, you've got a, you know, a baby girl, and that we was, you know, we were, you know, besides ourselves and just emotions and joy, you know, it's like a baby girl. But then, you know, there was that moment of, hang on, this is now, something's not going well, this is not right, you know. And then, you know, she pretty much got taken away straight. She got taken to the table, you know, next to us, and I could see them working on her, and, you know, I could see that she was, you know, being resuscitated, and, you know, that she was needing assistance for air and oxygen, and I could see them working away. But and that was the moment where I'm there, you know, looking, I could see what was happening, and I've got Claire, you know, next to me, who's, you know,
who can't see what's happening.
Can't see what's happening, yes, you know. And yes. Suddenly I'm now the important one, who is the eyes of the situation. And it's that moment of, okay, just stay calm. Let's you know, I remember that I didn't tell Claire exactly what was happening, because I didn't want her to be, you know, I didn't want her to sort of, you know, be in this situation. I didn't want to upset her or, you know, really stress her out as more than we were already stressing out. So I was just there trying to be calm and just trying to reassure her, everything's okay. I can see her. She looks beautiful. You know, she's looking well. She's over there. But yet then just, you know, waiting to see what was happening. So, you know, so she was very flat originally, and they worked on her for a good, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and then, you know, and then finally I could see that she was breathing by herself, and, you know, that was a huge sigh of relief when that was finally happening. So yeah, and then I was able, then they, you know, told me if I wanted to come over and cut the umbilical cord, which was like, okay, this is good. And, you know, and I still remember, they're like, oh, you want to take a photo? And it's like, I don't know. And it's like, Do I want to be taking photos? It's like, are you? It's like, are you trying to? You're all sort of making this feel like it's a everything is completely fine, and so. But I still, I still wanted to enjoy that moment of being my, finally becoming a father, and you know, that was always the thing. It's like to cut the umbilical cord was something that I always dreamed of, you know, to do, and then you know, I had that moment. It was like, well. I still want to enjoy that moment, so you know, was you know, really embraced in that, and you know, remember cutting the umbilical cord, and but then pretty much she got whisked away to NICU straight away. So she was within 20 minutes. I think there. I looked back at some of the reports, and it was 20 minutes, and she was whisked away to into NICU after that, and you know, and I still, yeah, we chat with Claire, and you know, she still remembers the moment that, you know, she's had her baby and the baby, you know, Lexi gets whisked away. And then she goes, she's in recovery for an hour without her baby, by herself, all alone, not knowing what's going on. And then I'm in NICU, you know, trying to work out what's going on. And I'm being now separated from Claire, and we've all been separated. And, you know, so I'm, you know, I'm in my moment of trying to work out what's going on, and then it's like, well, where's Claire? Where is she in all of this? So, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So, mate, we're in the moment as dads, aren't we? But it must be, I don't know, I'm trying to find the words without sounding patronizing. You know, we're not mums, are we?
No.
And the experience is obviously going to be quite different for us. But good on you, mate, for being there, for holding her hand, for talking to her, for reassuring her, for being the one on the spot, because that was your role at that moment, that day, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And because I think even, you know, the things that we kind of look back on and, you know, essentially Claire went straight to a ward, and even then, you know, we really had to fight to get Claire to go and see her baby. So we ended up, we finally organized that we were able to get Claire in her bed, obviously because she's just had major surgery, you know, to be able to get her wheeled out into the NICU in her bed, just so we could go and, you know, finally see Lexi. So it was probably a good couple of hours before Claire was even able to see her baby. And at that, you could just imagine, like, it's just so hard to imagine how that feeling is, not knowing what is happening, and not being able to see your baby.
Yeah. Well, you got to be there for that as well. And so what happened next, Dina? How did you get from there into the NICU? So how long was she in NICU?
So NICU, she was in NICU for 2 weeks. So the first 2 days was very critical. And, you know, she really struggled for the first couple of days in NICU. And it was a good 48 hours before she finally started sort of turning a corner and started gaining a little bit more strength and was able to be sort of taken off a few of the vital kind of pieces of equipment that was, you know, just helping her sort of breathe and just sort of being able to, you know, sort of, you know, fend for herself after that. So it was a good, you know, the first 48 hours was just, you know, really intense, and for both of us in that time. So that was really hard, and, you know, and
how long was it before you got to touch her? Or
It would have been probably, I think it was about 5 days before we were able to, you know, finally, you know, actually hold her. And that day was just, you know, amazing. When, you know, I mean, the staff there are just incredible, you know, and they do everything they possibly can. But obviously, you know, the initial times is, you know, it's just survival mode first, you know.
That's
so
right.
You've got to let them do what they need to do. So, you know, we were very patient in allowing that, but, you know, we were desperate to just, you know, get her out and be able to finally, you know, hold her. So when that day finally come, that was, you know, it was very special for us. So yeah, so she was in NICU for 2 weeks all up. The other thing I remember vividly is just how big she was in NICU compared to everybody else as well, because most of it's all prems, and, you know, there's just so many tiny little babies, and, you know, to have a baby in there that's pretty much at term, you know, she just looked huge, but she wasn't compared to everybody else. And that was the other thing that I'll also never forget.
So when did you first get a diagnosis?
So we were in NICU for the 2 weeks, and then we went into the nursery section, the special care.
Special care.
Called. That for another week. And so after we sort of got out of NICU, then, you know, they started doing some tests, and they wanted to do an MRI in that first sort of 3 weeks. So, you know, Lexi went straight in for an MRI. And so we knew, there was obviously no diagnosis in the first 3 weeks, but we knew that there was going to be complications. So I think we officially got diagnosis within the first 6 months. Like, I think by Christmas time, so she was born in May. By Christmas, we already had a diagnosis that, you know, that she was quadriplegic cerebral palsy at that stage. So it happened pretty quickly. So, you know, we were pretty quick to jump on knowing, but that was the other hard part when they're so young, and, you know, they give you ideas of what might happen, and that's the other hard part, is that wait and see of where, you know, how she's going to go. And, you know, it was so broad, the description of what might happen, you know, from that. So, you know,
I mean, it's the first thing you want to ask, isn't it? What's this going to mean? But
exactly.
Honestly, really, who knows? And in a way, it's almost a meaningless kind of question, really, isn't it?
Oh, exactly. But, you know, but we tried to jump on the front foot as quickly as we could. And, you know, we were just very lucky that with our circle of friends and support, you know, we just had some really great people with us that, you know, try to do as much as we possibly can. And, you know, we had some, you know, some really good naturopaths and even Chinese medicine and things like that. And, you know, we were just trying to do everything possible as you do from day one of, you know, of your new plan of trying to do what is possible. So, you know,
and that support group of family and friends, has that group travel, I mean, it may have changed, but have you had supporters who've traveled with you the whole way so far?
Pretty much, yeah. Look, you know, we're lucky to say, you know, we haven't lost many friends along the way because of our situation. You know, it was always, you know, tricky when you are in this sort of situation to, you know, you probably do lose some people, but we've been very fortunate that we've kept all of our circle of friends and support along the way, and they've pretty much stayed with us for the ride and have always been there. So that's been really good.
And you and Claire have shared the role of parenting and working and income, or how has that worked?
Yeah, so I think our roles were, you know, Claire's the one that really deserves, you know, she's the one that, you know, deserves all of the credit, I think, for where we are today. You know,
Claire, if you're listening,
Claire,
just heard that.
She is a superstar, and, you know, there's no way, you know, I feel a little bit guilty being the one that being the spokesperson here, but, you know, just the role that, you know, that my, wonderful part and played in this is just, you know, it's just so admirable and amazing. And
well, I'd love to speak with Claire too if that happens.
Oh, absolutely.
That would be great.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason, as you understand, was that we wanted to talk to Dad's for a while too. But Claire, yeah, if you are listening, we're all cheering and you know, putting our arms around you too.
That's
it's not not a competition. That's
no,
for sure.
Exactly. So I essentially, you know, my role at the early parts was the breadwinner. You know, that was kind of my role. And, you know, Claire's an artist. So prior to, you know, our plan was, you know, was before Lexi was born, we moved Claire's, we moved her studio to home. So we set up her studio. So the idea was that we would have a baby the first year that she could work from home and then eventually go back to her studio in the CBD and life would be normal. But, you know, 9 years on, you know, Claire is still working from home. We've set up the studio at home. So she, you know, does all her amazing artwork from there. But, you know, so yeah, so I was essentially the breadwinner because, yeah, life still goes on and we still have bills to pay and we still need to put food on the table. So I was, you know, my role, you know, working in events was always difficult because, you know, events are 24/7, 7 days a week. So there's no 9 to 5 in the work that I do. So, you know, I could be thrown here, there and everywhere at any particular time. So that's kind of the life that I lead. And then, you know, Claire was, you know, the one that was kind of the orchestrator of, you know, sort of starting our plans and, you know, starting with, you know, but together, you know, the first things that we did was start researching, you know,
you
researching.
Do, don't you?
So,
yes.
Yeah, we, you know, now we have to become professionals at being, you know, advocates and for cerebral palsy. And first of all, understanding what it was and, you know, just the term cerebral palsy, as you know, is just so broad. And,
yes,
you know, and people still ask me today, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, define cerebral palsy. It's like, well, it's so hard. It could be from one end of the scale to the other end of the scale. So, you know, it's really difficult for that to do. So,
but you do, you're right. You have to become an expert in the field, don't you?
Yeah, that's
and an
it.
Expert particularly in Lexi's experience,
yeah.
Which so, you are more than anybody else, the two of you.
Well, that's right. So we just researched. That was all we were doing for the first, you know, 6 months was what's out there, what can we possibly do to give her every possible chance. And, you know, and with that's the other thing with CP is there's not really many sort of options available in terms of, you know, what you want to do to try to, you know, improve her quality of life. You know, there's, you know, so we were just looking at every possible things and, you know, so, you know, then we went, you know, all of the different types of therapies and we were doing Feldenkrais and we were doing, you know, hyperbaric chamber and we would, you know, so we did a, well, that was the other thing. Back then, there was no NDIS either, you know. So, you know.
Hasn't that changed?
That everything. Has changed. So back then, there was all of these alternative, you know, therapies that we were looking into that seemed to be, you know, getting a lot of results, all cost a lot of money. You know, there was, everything was so expensive and it was pretty much all down to your own bat if you wanted those, you know, type of alternative sort of therapies to come into. You really had to either, you know, have a big pool of money, you know, which we didn't have, or then, you know, start fundraising. So we went down the fundraising route, which was...
How did that go?
Well, it was pretty incredible. I mean, we were, you know, when you first start off and, you know, it's like, oh, we can't ask people for money. It's not... We can't do that. It's not us. It's like we're too proud. You know, this is not going to, surely we could sell a couple of things. And, but it was like, no, but every intensive therapy is going to cost you $5,000 to $10,000 or whatever. So I had a good friend of mine who has a charitable organization called the Big Umbrella, which is a pretty much resource food from companies and essentially go out and feed the homeless and set up sort of food trucks and things like that. It was a really good organization. And he approached me and he said, oh, you know, I was doing a campaign called Team 140, where if you find 140 people, you get them to donate $1 a day. And then, you know, if you find 140 people, then suddenly you've raised $50,000. And it's like, well, that sounds a bit crazy. And with a friend, you know, also with, you know, another friend of mine, Kate, who actually we've had this chat as well, who's into film, where we actually met Christopher, funnily enough, your son.
Yes.
Which is a funny, another funny story, which we should tell another time.
Film, radio and television school.
Yeah, so she was like, oh, let's start a little campaign. I'll help you. Let's put a little video together that we could do and, you know, put it out there and see if we can potentially raise some money. So we did a little video and, you know, we just sort of put it on social media and without, I kid you not, within about 2 or 3 days, we had exceeded 140 people, and I think we pretty much raised over $70,000 within a week, and it was just mind blowing.
That is brilliant.
The support that people just jumped on board, and were like, "We want to help. We want to help. We want to do whatever we can." So we were just so fortunate and so lucky that, you know, that we had this support of friends, and then just raised this pool of money. That just really gave Lexi the best sort of start in life. And we explored all different sort of ideas that we could do. And we ended up, one of the things we ended up doing, which we don't talk about very much, but we ended up going to Panama and doing stem cell for Lexi in her, which is,
okay. Like,
we talk about it now and we she was like 1.5 and, we really explored it, and we were unsure about whether to try, but we tried to do as much research as we can, and we found a place in Panama that was, you know, world renowned, and we ended up going.
So tell us what that involves, Dino, for those who don't know. So stem cells.
Yeah, so they have donated umbilical cords, which they draw out the, they draw out the stem cells from the umbilical cord. And you know, so they pretty much, when we go there, it's a 5-day process where they essentially on day one, they extract some blood from Lexi, and then over the course of 5 days, they put her blood back in, but this time with added stem cell in it. And there's probably over a million stem cells that go in each day into Lexi. And so that was a 5-day process that we did. And, you know, it's the hard part was, I suppose, we it's hard to sort of define today how well that really went. You know, it's we don't, because there was no obvious example, because she was so young, you know, it's not like, it's defined. It's so clearly defined on just how well that did. But look, we don't regret it for a minute. And she really thrived after we did that, because we did a process where we did the stem cell, then we came back to Melbourne, then we did a 3 weeks intensive hyperbaric chamber intensive straight after that to try to. Because the idea would be that you do the stem cell and then you do the hyperbaric chamber, which would really push all of those cells into Lexi's bloodstream, and you know, the oxygen levels would really build up. So then we pretty much came from a whirlwind trip to Panama to come straight home, to then be every day spending 2 hours in a hyperbaric chamber for 3 weeks straight after that. To then, I think that's when we discovered Napa as well. So there's probably a lot of the listeners who would know Napa. Which is the Neurological and Physical Rehabilitation Center, which is now opened up in Australia finally. And they're just just amazing team of people, that OTs and physios and things, that do just really amazing work with rehab and, those sort of things. So it was just, you know, we were just so fortunate that we had those opportunities to do these sort of intensives, you know, and learning about plasticity and, you know, how, you know, that tackling everything as young, you know, while she's so young, while that, you know, while her brain can still be rewiring itself, you know, we just wanted to do every possible thing, but we knew some of our methods were going to be controversial, so we were, you know, we, a lot of that was pretty private, you know, and you know, there's
Thank you for sharing it with us. Oh, then,
I think honestly, it's important, yeah, and. And the other thing is, we talk about it now. It's like, if we had the opportunity to do it again, would we do it again? And I think we would say absolutely. You know, and
well, you know what we're hearing here. We're hearing two parents who, out of their love for their child, will do whatever it takes to give her the best chance, or him the best chance possible. Mm. And the minute you begin describing a particular pathway, somebody will have an opinion about whether that's a good idea or not, and that's okay, but this is your story, and we are hearing your story, and, you know, I appreciate the courage and the honesty that you would share things that perhaps at the time were things you kept to yourself, and so thank you for that.
Yeah, so they were pretty big moments, and, you know, but it was just, you know, but then it's amazing how quickly, you know, you think you've raised $70,000, you think you're set for life now, but that's how quickly that is all gone. And, you know, and you're only still, she's only 1.5, and you've still got so much more to do. And in your intensive therapies, the idea is that you keep doing them. You know, you can't, it's not a matter of you do it once and then that's it, it's done. You can tick that off your box and that's all over. It's like, well, no. Well, that's just one part, and then you've got to, you know, try to do that as often as you can. And I know with Napo, you know, back then, you know, I mean, Claire was one of the original sort of, not founder, but one of the original group of people that actually brought them to Australia, because she'd found, you know, we'd done a bit of research and found them in the States and were doing great work, and they were doing sort of, I think they came to Singapore, and then, you know, she contacted them about, you know, can we do it? Can we, you know, can we bring it to Melbourne? And, you know, then they said, well, if you can find another team of families, you know, organize that, and we'll bring a team and fly them over from the States and, you know, do those. But, you know, that was super expensive back then, and it's all, you know, from your, as I say before, from your own bat. So, yeah.
Man. But, so let's fast forward a little bit to not to today, but so then after, you know, those first couple of years of intensive trying everything that's possible, how has the story been with, you know, kinder and school and that kind of thing? How's Lexi doing?
So Lexi's doing really well. So in terms of, she goes to mainstream school. So that's been the other sort of questions that we always had was, you know, do we send her to mainstream school, or does she try to, or was she going to a special needs school? But, you know, Lexi's very bright. She's a very smart girl. So her intellectual, you know, capacity is really great. So, you know, that's never sort of stopped her. It's just her body won't do what it wants her to do. So, you know, so we introduced her to kinder and then, you know, to a mainstream school, you know, close to home, which was great. And, you know, through the aid of, you know, she has a Dynavox that she can communicate through by. Yes. She's verbal. She's quite verbal. You know, it's not, you know, fluent. You know, it does, you know, similar to what Christopher is, you know, it does take a lot of patience. People just have to be patient for her to get out what she wants to get out. So, you know, she's still quite verbal. So she can communicate still quite well with her voice, but through that and then the aid of her Dynavox as well is essentially how she communicates. And then, yeah, so between that and, you know, just setting up, you know, setting up the team at school with her aid, and we've been very lucky as well that the aid that we had from kinder has essentially been Lexi's main aid at school all the way through, and she's in grade 3 now. So we've had the same, you know, the same main aid with her for the last 5 years, which has been great. So she's grown up with Lexi as well. So
that's so good to hear.
Yeah, so that makes a big difference.
Doesn't it? Yeah. Mm. Listen, I wanted to ask you about you for a moment. You know, let's talk about being a dad. Here we are, dad to dad, talking about dads. Yes. and, of course, us blokes, we're all different as you are, you know, and therefore we each have our own individual unique window on this. You said earlier on that becoming a dad at last, so I guess this was something that you always wanted to do, to be a dad, and just reflect for a minute on what being a dad, you know, you've got Summer there too, and we're not trying to say that she's not part of the mix because obviously she is, but being Lexi's dad, you know, what's that like for you?
Yeah, you know, it's I think my role is sort of being the father to Lexi, you know, for me mainly it's, you know, my goal is to just make her life as accessible as possible, and I never want her to miss out on anything. So, you know, I end up becoming Lexi in terms of, you know, if we go out and, you know, especially a lot of the younger years when, you know, you'd go to a kid's birthday party and things like that, and there's always a playground, and there's, you know, there's all the other kids are running onto the playground, and you know, Lexi really wants to join in. So then you become Lexi in terms of, you know, while all the other parents are out there, you know, socializing and chatting, you know, you become
that person.
You're
running on the field, aren't you?
I'm the one. Yeah, that's the one. I'm on the trampolines. I'm crawling through all of these tunnels, and I'm, you know, sweaty, and it's like I'm getting stuck. And first of all, you know, I'm the one contending and trying to explain to all these other kids, and like, why are you on here? Why are you on this playground? You're a big person. You shouldn't be on this playground. It's like, just move over, buddy. I'm coming through. Don't you stand in my way. The two of us are coming through. So, you know, I find my role that, you know, I just try to make, you know, I just want to make her life as happy as I possibly can. So, you know, I find that, you know, I become a little bit more of the sort of the hands-on in terms of the lifting and a lot more of the harder sort of work process that, you know, of, you know, just carrying her through things and those sort of things. So it's, yeah, I just, yeah, just wanted to make sure that she could do everything possible and just
and just nothing will stop you from being there with her. Yeah,
absolutely not. And it gets, you know, now that she's nine, you know, I mean, that realization now that it's getting harder and harder, and she gets heavier and heavier, and you know, I'm not a spring chicken anymore. Now, you know, it's like nearly to, you know, turning 50 next year, which is also a bit daunting, and it's like,
bloke.
Yeah, exactly. So,
it's a real thing, though. I don't mean to joke about it because you're right. As we age as parents, that's a factor in the whole dynamic. Absolutely.
Exactly. So, that's, you know, the next part of the journey, I think, is how to adapt. So, yeah, so, you know, so we definitely play completely, you know, I think our roles are all, I mean, why we, the same role is that we both love and care for our daughters, you know, equally as much. You know, I think the roles we play, you know, are always a little bit sort of different and, you know, so, you know, yeah.
And speaking as a partner also, I mean, sometimes these kinds of additional challenges in a family can put or have an impact on the relationship.
Oh, absolutely.
How's that for you?
Yeah, look, it's so challenging. It can be so challenging, and I would be lying if I was here to say it hasn't, you know, put strains on our relationship over the years. But, you know, I think we tend to find a way, and, you know, I think I'm probably very similar to probably a lot of men who are not very good at opening up and communicating as well as, you know.
I'm not sure that I'd say that, Dino.
Oh, really?
But anyway, go on.
Well, you know.
That's not, from my point of view, that's not what I would have said.
No, okay. Well, I've always not been a great communicator, I think, a lot of times. And, I probably don't talk as I probably don't share my emotions as much as I probably should. So me opening up, you know, I think is something that I've kind of, you know, probably still dealing with now, you know, and that's probably the key to our sort of our longevity is just, you know, is I've got to learn to sort of, you know, open up and sort of communicate a lot better than probably where I probably have been over the years. But, you know, we get there and, you know, we're in a good spot now, which is good. And, we're a team. That's the other thing, you know, we, you know, we need to stick together as a team, because it's you know, for us, it's the teamwork that we both do that really helps.
And as you said earlier, you're a team of four, really, aren't you?
Well, that's right, exactly. So,
Listen, Dino, one of the things that I don't like about these conversations is how quickly they go by and we run out of time. Would it be all right with you if we check back in with you sometime in a little while and see how things are going for you? Because there's so much more we could talk about. But as a snapshot, mate, you have really – this has been wonderful. Oh, thank good. You so much.
Yeah, well, I can't believe we've already 45 minutes in. I feel like we haven't
Yeah, a little bit more than that.
Chatted
yeah.
about really
and
many
And that's
things.
Okay. Look, there's no rules. It's just that, you know, I think we try to keep the time similar each episode so that people who go for their walk or who have their break, they know that they can fit the conversation in. So we try to honour that. But there's no pretense that this is the whole story at all.
No, no.
It's a snapshot. No. And it's been just wonderful. So could we talk again sometime?
Yeah, look, I'd love to. Like, you know, I think about things as well, like, you know, what support men kind of have in this sort of in the experiences that we go through. And, you know, I'd really love to sort of talk about, you know, what it is that men can potentially do and
well,
what
you know
sort
what?
Of avenues.
I've got something I want to ask you about after we stop recording. Because so watch this space,
sure.
Peas and beans. There may be some more to come here. I think you're exactly right, Dino. And, you know, there are some things there we might be able to explore. Thank you, Dino. We, on behalf of all the green vegetables and others who are listening, thank you so much for your time.
No worries. As I said, I'm very humbled to have been asked, because the group of people who are on this are just all amazing people, and we're all rock stars, really. And it's just, you know.
Yeah,
just,
you're one
just
of
so,
us.
Well, I'm just so proud to be just a small sort of part in all of this anyway, and along with everyone else who we all deserve the credit, I think. So, no, I'm honoured to have been asked.
Good on you, mate.
Great. Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.